What? There is a handout. So here we go. Here's the handout.
Is it the same one from before?
No. Totally different. Okay. We're done with that handout. Okay. Here you go. Okay. Can I get started? Is it set up?
You're on.
I'm on, all right. The next great frontier on the subject of mekachtos, of mistaken transactions, is mekachtos in connection with marriages. Can you nullify a marriage on the basis of the same argument that we've been speaking about in connection with business transactions? We said that if a person orders a chair and then it turns out that the chair is defective, so then they have the ability, if it's a very significant defect, to say that it's a mekachtos and they want their money back, and they'll return the chair to the seller. And we say that with respect to houses, if the walls are falling down, it could be a mekachtos. And even if the person held on to the object for a period of time until they discovered that there was something which was fatally flawed with the object, they're still able to revoke the transaction. And it's considered like the transaction never really took place. The whole thing was an error. It's considered to be a mekachtos. So do we have a similar idea with respect to a marriage? A person contracts a marriage, they enter into a marriage relationship, and then the husband discovers something which is fatally flawed with the wife discovers something which is fatally flawed with the husband. Do we say that the marriage is null and void, that the whole thing is a mekachtos? Or does this only apply to business transactions as opposed to marriages? In a marriage, you could say that the person is so flawed that we're going to require the wife to accept a get, or to accept a get without even having the benefit of her ksuva. Or that the husband is so flawed that they're going to require him and maybe even compel him to give his wife a get, but not necessarily that we're going to declare the marriage null and void. Now the question comes up sometimes, if you have a marriage where the only way halakhically, if you have a valid marriage, to end the marriage is either the husband or the wife dies, or the husband gives his wife a divorce. He has the right of divorce, he has the right to get a bill of divorce, he has to deliver it into his wife's hands, and unless he actually writes or commissions the writing of a bill of divorce, a get, to deliver it to his wife, then she's still considered to be married halakhically, and she's not allowed to marry somebody else. Let's say the husband refuses to give her a get, so sometimes you don't really have a way out. If there was a perfectly valid marriage and the husband doesn't give a get, then the marriage remains a valid marriage, and the woman can become what's known as an aguna. She's trapped in the marriage if the marriage is functionally over, but the husband refuses to give her a get. So there has been a movement for some time to try to find grounds to say, well, in certain cases when the husband refuses to give his wife a get, maybe it can be, we can declare that the marriage was null and void from the inception based on Kiddush Etos. But is there such a thing to say, what's the Kiddush Etos? Had the wife known that the husband would be such a jerk that he wouldn't give her a get, then she never would have married him in the first place. So tos, as we saw in the case of business transactions, generally means that there is some built-in flaw to the object itself.
But he had been a jerk when they got married.
It has to have existed at the time of the purchase of the item, that there was a flaw. If the flaw only develops later on, so we generally say nistachva sadeo. Somebody buys a field and then there's a terrible storm and the field gets ruined. So we say if that happened after the time of the purchase, so that's the purchaser's bad luck. It's not the seller's responsibility anymore. So the husband becomes a jerk 10 years after the marriage began. We don't say that that was a built-in condition. Yes, he was human, but the wife knew when she married the husband that he was human. And every single human being is capable of being a jerk. That's just part of the human condition. The Torah was not given to ministering angels. It was given to human beings. So it has to be some sort of a flaw. That had the person known about the flaw, they would not have wanted to marry the person in the first place. Let's say that if the wife would have known about the flaw, she wouldn't have wanted to marry the husband in the first place. It has to be something which is objective along those lines. So first we have to determine that there is such a thing as Kiddush Etos. And that we can actually apply this principle, and then we have to determine if there is such a principle, does that simply mean that we're going to require a get in certain circumstances, or does it mean that a get is not even going to be necessary altogether? And then we have to determine, is there a difference if the flaw is a flaw that is possessed by the wife as opposed to a flaw that's possessed by the husband? Because so we have a general principle in halakha that we find in a number of places throughout the Gemara, and that women are prepared to settle for a lot less than what men are prepared to settle for, because a woman has the attitude of Tofa Meisav Tandum and Lameisav Amalu, that a woman would rather have companionship than to be alone and forsaken, even if the husband doesn't really measure up to her standards. So maybe then a woman is, we can presume that a woman is willing to overlook more flaws than a husband might be willing to overlook. So these are all the questions that are on the table. Let's go through the sources. We have a whole bunch of sources. I'm going to try to go through them in today's session. We'll see how successful we are. So first, I just wanted to remind you of the basic halakha of Mekavtos, because it's worthwhile making the comparison and seeing if the comparison is a viable one. This is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Lamed Beis Sif Gimel. We bring the halakha. The halakha is Hamokel Chaveiro Karka Uevad Ubeimo Shamitalos. When somebody sells to his fellow land or a slave or an animal, even things that wouldn't be subject to what we call the laws of Onah, to the laws of overcharging by 1/6 that the purchase price has to be returned, but even things like karka that wouldn't be subject to the normal laws of Onah are subject to the laws of Mekavtos. Or Shamitalos, you sell a pair of shoes, whatever it is. And then there was a flaw in the item that was sold that was unknown to the purchaser at the time. Even if it's discovered 5 years later, the sale can be revoked. Why? She said, because this is considered to be a mistaken transaction. This is only if the purchaser, when the purchaser discovers that there's a flaw, he doesn't continue to utilize the object. Otherwise, it's considered to be a mechila, it's considered to be forgiving the flaw, in which case the transaction would stand. So presumably we have to bear this in mind in connection with the Kiddushin. If we're going to say that a marriage can be revoked based on Mekavtos, we would have to apply presumably the same principles, which means that when the husband or the wife discovers this terrible flaw, they have to exit the marriage at that point in time as opposed to staying in the marriage. Because if they stay in the marriage, then it shows that they're prepared to waive this problem, right? So we mention, and it bears repeating, the Bir HaGrah. The Gra'an, the Shulchan Aruch, we ask the question, you'll remember, what is the source of this idea of Mekavtos? Is this just an extension of the idea of Onah, that this is also a form of cheating your fellow, Losonu Ishi Samiso? Is that where this is coming from? So the Gra says something absolutely fascinating. It says, where does this idea come from? If you look at the various Mishnayos and the Gemaras and Ksuvos, it talks about a husband who's getting married and he discovers that the woman whom he thought was unblemished and flawless, that she has some terrible blemishes on her skin and her body, and he would never have wanted to marry her in such a case. So we talk about when he can get out of it, when he owes her a Ksuva, doesn't owe her a Ksuva, and so forth. When is it considered to be a Mekavtos? Well, the Gemara Sham, Laman Mechira Meisha, and says the Gra, so the Gemara has the whole discussion with respect to a husband discovering flaws with respect to his wife, and then the Gemara extrapolates from there, if you read the Sugya, and says, oh, and the same idea applies if somebody buys an ox and they want the ox to be a plowing ox, and then it turns out that this ox is a goring ox, and they are not able to use it because it's a danger to society. Is that considered to be a Mekavtos? They buy an animal to eat, and they discover that the animal was a trefa, and they make a calculation based on the type of trefus that is discovered, that the trefus must have been in the animal. Let's say they buy an animal to shecht it, and then they shecht it, discovered it's a trepa, and it's a type of trepa that must have existed even 3 months earlier. Or they buy wine, and they discover that it's vinegar, and based on how strong the vinegar is, they're able to calculate that it already was vinegar at the time that the seller sold it. So in all these cases, we would say that the Mekach is revoked, that it's a mistaken transaction, and the discussion in the Gemara is a continuation of the discussion in the Mishnah about flaws that are discovered when a man enters into marriage with a wife. So the Gemara says, really, it's not, our question is misplaced. Our question was, can we carry over this idea of Mekavtos to marriage? And the girl says, where do you think we got it from? We got it from marriage. That is the source of all of these halakos. Now, this is an interesting question, because I still maintain that you could understand that on some level Mekavtos is an extension of the laws of Onah. But what's Onah? Onah might be where there was willful cheating, you know, on some level. We say, no, but even if it just turns out the price is wrong, so a person could back out. So maybe willful, not willful, I could really divide Mekavtos from Onah either way. I'm not dropping that, but the Gra says, no, it's something else entirely. So what is it? It's very interesting. Rabbi Kiva Eger, in source number 3 over here, Rabbi Kiva Eger says, you know what the source is of Mekaptos? He's talking about a case where a man marries a woman who was previously married when she was widowed or something like that, and she told him that she was a Besula. No, she was married, but maybe the husband, it wasn't just a Kiddushin, it was a Nisuin. Maybe the husband died 3 days later. They didn't get around to having intimate relations. That's what the woman claims. And she says that she's a Besula. Now the man discovers she's really a Be'ula. Not that we did an investigation and we interviewed witnesses to discover that she's really a Be'ula, but he discovered the halacha is that if a woman becomes a widow for after she's already a Nesua, so even if she insists that she's still a Be'ula, we say, no, you're not a Be'ula. We are halachically assuming that you're a Be'ula and you're not going to get Masayim Zuz. And you're not going to, so now the husband is sort of upset because he married this woman based on an assumption that halachically speaking, she could be considered to be a Be'ula. So Vega talks about that case. Is it considered to be a Mekaptos? Is it not considered to be a Mekaptos? And in the course of his discussion, this is Rabbi Kiva Eger, Maduot in Yana Simenun Aleph, he says that where does this idea of Mekaptos come from? So he says, where does Tanai come from? Where is it that we have an idea that a person can stipulate a condition? He says, I'm going to marry, he says to a woman, I'll marry you on condition that your father is worth $1 million, something like that. You know, a reasonable condition. So he marries her based on a certain, you know, condition, and it turns out the condition is false. And then we say, okay, so the marriage is null and void. So where does this idea of conditions come from? It comes from the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. In B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, they're passing over the Yarden. They're supposed to get a Yerusha on the western side of the Yarden. So we don't want the western side of the Yarden. We want the eastern side of the Yarden. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, so we'll make a condition. If you pass over, and you're going to fight on behalf of your brethren, and you're going to really step up in battle, so then I'll give you the portion that you want on the east side of the Yarden. But if you're not going to step up in battle and go and wage the war together with your brethren, so then you'll get the normal Yerusha that you were going to get anyway. So tonight, he has a whole set of Tanoim, and we learn from this whole incident in Matos Masi of Moshe Rabbeinu negotiating, so to speak, with the B'nai Gad, or making the stipulation with B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. So we learn the laws of Tanoim. That's how we stipulate. And when there is a Tanai, it has to be done in a fashion similar to the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. The Tanai before the Maisa, the condition before the thing that has to be done, Hayim Kodim Lalav, the positive before the negative, etc., etc., all these different elements of making a condition, they're all derived from B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. So it says, so he says that if this is the case, so he says that this is also true, assumes that Rabbi Akiva Eger, that as a matter of Sevara, let's say that a woman, that a man only wanted to marry a woman who didn't have blemishes and who didn't have, the commission talks about a case where he discovers that she's a woman who took all kinds of vows, that she can't eat meat or drink wine, she's not going to be any fun in marriage, so he wants to add to the marriage because of the vows that she took upon herself. The Mishnayos talk about how that might create some sort of a deficiency in the binding nature of the marriage. So it really says, Rabbi Kiva Eger, look 5 lines in the bottom. All of these cases where a husband discovers a blemish with a wife really should only work for him to get out of the marriage. For us to say that there is some type of escape hatch in the marriage, only if he would have stipulated all of these conditions, like the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. Therefore he says that all of the cases of Mekaptos that we have in our halakhic discourse, Hainu de Af below Hisna Anansadi the copy by Hisna Mani Midin tonight. He says that even if a person didn't make a condition, because we don't find that in every single case a person needs to have made the conditions, so he says it's because it's considered as if we are so sure that this was important to a person, it was important to the husband that the wife not have any major physical blemishes, it's like an uninsidy, it's considered as if the kapid, that we know for sure that he is so meticulous about this, it's as if he made conditions. And therefore, the way that it works is through the mechanism of making conditions. That sometimes there is such a clear indication that a person wanted to make a condition, that even if he didn't actually make the condition, it's considered as if they made the condition. He says that is the mechanism of Mekaptos. It's really an extension, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, of this idea of tonight. Tonight, had we not learned from the case of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben, the conditions were Lo Yishayach was dina the Mekaktos, then there would not have been the possibility of ever escaping from any kind of transaction, okay, based on Mekaktos, because there's no reason why this should work any more effectively than a person who makes an actual stipulated condition. So therefore he says the fact that stipulated conditions work comes from Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuben. If we're going to go even further and say that even without a stipulated condition, something is going to be revoked just because we assume that it's a toast, then somebody would not have wanted to enter into the transaction had a certain condition, and they know that a certain condition was present. So that's really an extension of this din of Tanai. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eger says. And therefore he says, since this is true, so whenever I have a type of marital situation, for example, where a Tanai would not be possible, and Rabbi Akiva Eger makes an assumption here, which is questionable. He says that there was a sefer that was written a long time ago. Somebody wants to come up, and there were French rabbis about 100 years ago, more than 100 years ago, who wanted to come up with a solution to aguna problems. You see, it's not only in our generation. We try to systemically solve aguna problems. His solution was that every single time that people would get married, they would make a condition that the marriage would be null and void in the event that the couple ever becomes civilly divorced. So all they would need is a civil divorce, because once they would get a civil divorce, their halakhic marriage would automatically unravel and become null and void. And there was a sefer that was written by pretty much every single gadol and every rav and every, you know, shtut rav who was alive at that point in time, called Ein Tanai B'Nisuin. You can't do that because the Gemara says explicitly, Yevamos, it says that you cannot make a condition in connection with Nisuin. Connection with Kiddushin, yes. But once there's Nisuin, we have a principle, and the most of Bilas to Bilas Nus, that the husband is not going to make his intimate acts during the marriage dependent upon a certain condition being fulfilled or not. He wouldn't retroactively want all of those relationships to be declared illegitimate and illicit, that he's having these intimate sexual relationships, and retroactively they're going to be declared illegitimate. So there's no way that anybody would ever agree to that. So therefore we say Ein Tanai B'Nisuin. That's a general rule. It's a general rule, Ein Tanai B'Nisuin. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, well, if Ta'us, the idea of Mekach Ta'us, is really an extension of Tanai, and we say Ein Tanai B'Nisuin, so once a person's already married, so then all bets are off the table. That's what Rabbi Akiva Eger wants to suggest in connection with his Nisuin case. As we'll see, that is not necessarily true at all. But we might be able to, at least in part, accept this thesis of Rabbi Akiva Eger. Maybe Ta'us is really different from tonight on some basic level. That Ta'us is going on a different type of scenario than when a person makes an actual explicit condition. Maybe it's a little bit different. But nonetheless, in terms of the basic source of where it comes from, maybe we can still accept the thesis of Rabbi Akiva Eger that the basic source for both Tanai and for Ta'us is the idea of the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, that we see that it is possible to make a certain transaction, a certain chalos, dependent upon the fulfillment or lack of fulfillment of a condition. We see that with respect to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. So therefore, we can say that just like that can be accomplished through making a condition, in certain cases, it can be accomplished through our attributing a certain necessary prerequisite in terms of the mindset of the person entering into the transaction, to say that this prerequisite wasn't present, so then the person did not have the requisite mindset to have entered into this transaction in the first place, that we can make the effectiveness of a transaction, whether a business transaction, whether a marriage transaction, dependent upon the fulfillment of a certain presumption that we assume the person would have wanted to be present when they entered into the transaction. Yes. Okay.
I'm not interested in whether he can keep them in the country or not keep them in the country. Can they get involved with the father and the son?
They might be able to get involved with the father and the son, particularly if the father is shielding the son. That's a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch, whether if you put pressure on the father and as a result the son gives a get, so is that considered to be a valid get or is not considered to be a valid get? But if they've already made a decision that this is a case that warrants pressure, so then it might be perfectly legitimate under the circumstances to apply the pressure in order to get the son to give the get. But that's not exactly what we're talking about over here. That's a different type of solution to an aguna problem. Here we're talking about, what about being able to declare that the marriage was void ab initio from the very outset. And that would require, what it would require in every single case, an examination of the circumstances of how was the marriage entered into. So the seminal tshuva, one of the seminal tshuvas on the subject, which really goes into this idea of the mechanism that we would have to trigger over here, is the Beis HaLevi. Okay, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, father of Chaim Soloveitchik, the Beis HaLevi, Shelos Tshuvas, Chela Gimel, Simon Gimel. Okay? Now, what's interesting is that in the writings of his great-grandson, also name of Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, so he draws a very stark distinction between Taos and Tanai. Says they're not identical, okay? And it would be a mistake, I suppose, to maybe interpret Rabbi Kiva Eger's Tshuva as saying that they're identical, but he says that they work in very different ways. The Gemara in Ksuvos and Daf Yotzeh says Tanai Milsa Harisahi. That a Tanai is something which is separate and distinct from the transaction itself. So he says, what does that mean? Says when it comes to a Tanai, a person has a Das Kinyan. A person enters into a transaction fully having the intention that they're going to consummate the transaction, but they want to be able to have an escape hatch, so they articulate an escape hatch, and that's what's called a Tanai. They say, okay, I'm entering into this marriage, but if it turns out that my father-in-law doesn't really have $1 million, so then I'm going to have an escape hatch from the marriage. But when it comes to Tos, he says, Tos is totally different, because Tos means that there was no, it turns out, based on there being a mistake in the person's assumption when they entered into the marriage, they really had no Das Kinyan altogether. That they really didn't have the record, they didn't know what they were getting into in the first place. So the whole thing never really gets off the ground. It's not a question of, I have a Kinyan, I have a transaction that gets off the ground, but I have a way of nullifying it. Says if there's a toast, if there's just a fundamental error, a mistake in assumption at the time of entering into the transaction, so then it turns out that there is no transaction altogether. And this is well understood if you look at the Mishnah Lamelach in Perek Vav, the beginning of Perek Vav of Hilchos Ishus, and also this is a discussion in the Ramban in the Sefer Sukkos on Maseches Gittin and Daf Lamed Tes Amud Aleph in the Daf Be'arif. They make the suggestion that maybe the distinction between Tos and Tanai goes a little bit like this. And this sort of is relevant to the discussion. I'm really giving you conceptual underpinnings. There are lots of exciting and fun cases over here, but I think it's more important to get the conceptual underpinnings, because this is alumnusha, you know, Chabur, at least it's supposed to be. So the conceptual underpinning says the Rav, based on the Ramban. I also found this in the Mishnah Melech as well, as a suggestion, is that if something is l'sha'avar, you're talking about whether something, a certain condition, already exists or doesn't exist, and you have an assumption that it exists, but it turns out that it doesn't exist, so that's a tos. That's just a mistake. That a person enters into marriage, he thinks that his wife doesn't have physical blemishes. It turns out she really did have physical blemishes all along, so that's what we call a tos. A Tanai is a person says, okay, I'm marrying you, but if it should turn out that 10 years from now, it should turn out that a certain incident occurs, so then I retroactively want this marriage to be null and void. What's the classic case of that? The one case where we do allow Tanai B'Nisuin is a case of a man who gets married and he has a brother who is a mumar. He has a brother who has left the faith, who is an apostate. And they enter into the marriage based on the condition that in the event that the husband will die without any children, and the wife is then going to have to do chalitza or yibum with this mumar who's going to refuse to do chalitza or yibum with her, and then she'll be an aguna forever, it'll turn out retroactively that this marriage was null and void. Okay, but that is not something that's existing right now. It's something that's going to happen later on. So that would be a Tanai, where we would have to apply all the conditions of Tanayim and so forth, as opposed to a toast. So a toast means that the person went in with a certain assumption, but they made a mistake with respect to that assumption. So take a look now with that introduction to the Beis HaLevi. So the Beis HaLevi says, he was talking about a case where a woman got married, and it turned out that this man had a major blemish. He had a major physical disability. And he gives the example of epilepsy. In those days, they didn't have cures for epilepsy as much as they have nowadays, I guess, but fill in the blank. he has a very serious physical disability, and the woman says, had I known that he would have had this disability, I never would have married him to begin with. So his question that he raises is, do we say that this is a mekach tos, and therefore the woman doesn't need a get, and the get, or that the marriage is somehow diminished and is null and void? What do we say? So he talks about this a little bit, and he says, I've seen a lot of discussions about this, and I've seen from one end of the spectrum, there are those who say that we apply the principle of tav lemeis of tandum lemeis of amalu, that we say that a woman is always comfortable with any degree of husband, even if he's tremendously flawed, and therefore you cannot apply kedushin tos with respect to a flaw in the husband. But then he says, but there are others who say otherwise. So turns to the next page two, and he brings a sugya from Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud. Okay, what's the sugya Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud? This is a very important sugya because this is the sugya that's really cited by the major poskim who speak about the subject, including Moshe Feinstein, and the Beis Halevi brings this sugya as well. So sugya in Baba Kama then asks about, we were just speaking about a yibama, right? A woman who gets married to a man and he dies without any children, and now she has to do yibum or chalitza with the brother-in-law. What if the brother-in-law is a mukashkin? What's a mukashkin? A mukashkin is somebody who has a terrible physical affliction. He walks on the street and his limbs fall off his body. He's like constantly has skin and limbs, body parts that are like falling off of him. It's like a grotesque, a very gruesome, disgusting thing. And not to cast aspersions, and the person might be a very nice guy, but no woman in her right mind would want to be married to such an individual. So do we say at the time that a man dies without any children, and now the woman would be forced to be do yibum or chalitza in front of him with his mukashkin, that she says, well, there's no way in the world I ever would have wanted to do yibum with this mukashkin, so I never would have gotten married to my husband had I known that he would end up dying without children, and I would be placed in a situation of yibum with a mukashkin. I certainly wouldn't want to marry this guy. So do we say then that she doesn't need a chalitza from this fellow either, because maybe her initial marriage is going to be declared null and void, in which case she doesn't even need to do yibum or chalitza with the brother-in-law? So the Gemara answers, no. Uninsided the Melech Nikala, the Chodahu, that we are certain that she would be satisfied with any kind of a husband because of this principle of Tavla Mesav Tandu, Mila Mesav Amalu. So says Rashi on that Gemara, okay, Rashi says, he's just sort of quoting, citing Rashi indirectly, but I'll give you the Lashon of Rashi. Rashi says, Melech Nikala, that she's going to be satisfied with pretty much anything. Why? The Scottish the Rishon, she's Shalem, meaning what? Not that she's satisfied being married to the Mukashkin. She's happy to marry the husband, the first husband, even though she knows when she marries him, there's a chance that he's going to die without any children, because it's a remote possibility. And since it's only a remote possibility, even though she might be thrust into that very uncomfortable situation, still this is good enough for her to at least marry the first husband. The Scottish Rishon Shushalim, she's prepared to marry the first husband who doesn't have body parts falling off. He's Shalim. Al suffix there, based on the doubt, Shim Yamus, Yizakik La'akhi, based on the doubt that if he dies, so then she will be forced to marry the brother. Okay, so however you construe this Rashi, what Rashi seems to be saying is, and there are different ways of getting to this conclusion in the words of Rashi, but what Rashi seems to be saying is that if we're talking about her marriage to the husband himself, if the husband would be a mukashkin, not the brother-in-law, but she would marry the husband, and she would discover a day later, after the wedding party is over, after the wedding reception, they go home, and she discovers that he's a mukashkin, then suddenly, like, his skin is falling off in the bed. So then, in such a case, we would say that the principle of Tav Lemeisav Tandu is not applicable. This is such an abhorrent situation that would, in fact, be a mekach tos. That would, in fact, be a mekach tos. There's a whole discussion about, some say, if instead of the brother-in-law being a mukashkin, the brother-in-law is the shitas hagaonim. They say that if the brother-in-law would be a mumar, he wouldn't be a mukashkin, he would be a mumar. So mumar is even worse than a mukashkin, because it would be like a relationship that is founded upon prohibition, upon somebody who is his entire lifestyle is antithetical to Judaism. who left the faith, that is something which is even more abhorrent than being married to a mukashkin on some level, that there was a sheet of the Gonim that said that in such a case, we could say that the original marriage was null and void. If it turns out that the husband dies without children, and then she would have to marry the brother-in-law who is the mumar, Rashi happened to disagree with that. So some brought a raya from the fact that Rashi only disagrees in that case, that he would not disagree in the case where the husband himself was a mukashkin, where there's something very flawed about the husband himself. So we see from this Rashi that there is some sort of an acknowledgement that you can have a mekach ta'os even with respect to a flaw within the husband, that a wife would be allowed out of the marriage. But what does it mean that she would be allowed out of the marriage? So the Beis HaLevi says something very, very interesting. He says that this Rashi is not negating the notion that Tav L'Meisav Tandum L'Meisav Amalu. Look at the bold face type at the beginning of the fourth paragraph. But near the hospital, Yosef Yuvanated Kavanas Rashi said that by the Nikol Dor that means Nisha Bechodu Nikola. When we say that a woman is satisfied with very little, by the day of Klal Gomer, a Kol Anoshim, that is not an absolute rule that applies to every single marital situation. The number the Kol Anoshim, by the day of Makbidos, a Kol Mumin Shibol. It doesn't mean that they don't care about any flaw whatsoever. The Nikol Afidu Mukashkin Shumei Akopin Osalotzi. After all, she would be married to the Mukashkin. We would force him to divorce her, according to the Gemara. The Mishnah and Dapai in Zayin Amanav of Ksubos says if it turns out the man's a Mukashkin, we force him, we compel him to divorce his wife. So if we would compel him when he became a Mukashkin after marriage to divorce his wife, if it turns out that he was a Mukashkin and we didn't know about it, so we'll say that's Kiddushei Tos. Okay? It says, Gam Minodu Barakam Nisuin. The classic case that the Mishnah is talking about is when he became a Mukashkin after Nisuin. Because we see with our own eyes, says the Beis HaLevi, that women are not prepared to marry anybody. Yes, they might be desperate, but they're not that desperate that they would marry a Mukashkin, and therefore, if it turns out that a man is a Mukashkin, so then we'll say that the marriage is null and void retroactively.
Without a get.
So that's the question. When we say that it's null and void, does that mean that we're going to let her go without a get altogether? So that's a separate, secondary question. Okay? So now he says something else which is very interesting. Go to the bold type at the very bottom. All right? He says like this. He says that the Gemara is working with a development that's going to happen after marriage. Namely, the husband dies, and now she is forced in front of this brother-in-law, who's a mukashkin, right? So that's more of a case of what we described as the type of thing you would make a tznai, you make a condition about. So then we say, if the condition wasn't made, right? If a condition wasn't made, so do we say there's an ungun of the mukach, that there's such a clear, obvious indication that this is a tonight that she would want to make, it's as if you made the tonight. So he said that whole discussion in the Gemara is in the realm of tonight, the realm of something you'd have to make a condition over. Well, remember we said there's also this other category of toast. Toast, we said, is something that might go retroactively, is something that exists at the time of the marriage. So he says toast is subject to a totally different group of standards than tonight. Very fascinating. About Daladaya, toast, the Esim of Isaac. If it's something which is a toast, it's a mistake in the actual maise, in the intrinsic nature of the transaction. Not like a side thing, but the object, like the merchandise itself. The husband is the merchandise himself, right? We could go and scotch the echo no that she bamun. She marries somebody, and it turns out this guy is a mukashkin. The himal yadami is there. She didn't know. The zenikwa mekach toast. That's already not the category of tonight. That's the category of mekach toast, right? The toast goes there in the beginning of tonight. Has nothing to do with tonight. Very interesting. It sounds a little bit different from what Rabbi Akiva Eger is saying, right? The God Moshiach, for once it's different from Rabbi Akiva Eger. So now, this is something that you're going to be able to do not only after the Erisin, but even after the Nisuin, right? Because you know, little long, you're going to be limited, even if you say that tonight is limited in that way, right? Well, the Zevah by Clyde, it doesn't matter that we say that it wasn't expressed, that Bidushal double inside the Etzma Maisa Yabitos. It's because the intrinsic action, the intrinsic transaction act itself is actually flawed. It was ever by cloud, and for this we don't need Shia Umdun and Nemukha. We don't even need that it's an Umdun and Nemukha. Anything where the woman would say that I would not have entered into this marriage, okay, and what she's saying is credible, right? Even if it's not an umdun and Nemukha, who is in Mekach Tos for Kozim. That's going to be a Mekach Tos. As long as it's the sort of thing where we can reasonably surmise that your average woman, if she would have known about this, she never would have been willing to enter into the marriage, right? Okay, very, very fascinating. And now, if you look at the very last paragraph of Rabbi, if you look at the very last paragraph of the Beis Halevi, he throws in this final clincher, which is once we've departed from that model of Rabbi Kiva Eger to say that it functions as Tanai, and we say no, Tos functions very, very differently. So then he points out exactly the nafka mina Rabbi Kiva Eger had expressed is not going to be a nafka mina. So he says, take a look at the bold face in the very last paragraph of the Shuvah on page 3. So you can't say that this is only going to be v'naflamina erisin below v'naflamina nisuin, that there is a tosos in Baba Kama that says that once we're assuming that it works, we didn't deny the idea that maybe she could get out of the marriage, that's only if she was, her original marriage did not consummate with nisuin, and only had erisin, and only had kiddushin. Ze'eno, not true. That's only if there was no flaw in the intrinsic act of Kiddushin, the Mekadesh Yashalim. Because when we're just worried about the brother-in-law, the Mekadesh was perfectly fine. The original merchandise of the husband was perfectly fine, right? The Gamashash Niskacha said, Yodas Misav, he said, Yakal Yashatipo, Yasukukukukul, and Mukashkin. And she knew about the possibility she might fall in front of the Mukashkin. She knew all the facts. So therefore it's only a question of Tanai, it's not a question of Tos. So there we're trying to figure out whether we can make it work in terms of Tanai. Skip to the last boldface section, about Beninsa Mumba Bala Atzmo. But if you find a blemish in the Baal himself, the Banalam is some Mecca Tos, Shitosalibashkidushim, that she didn't know that he was a Mukashkin, or a Kotos, the holy called Kobazesha Talakuda, that our Tos is only dependent upon was their mistake. It doesn't matter when you find out that there's a toast. Even if you find out after Nisuin there's a toast, you still be able to aggregate the Nisuin. Okay? So, therefore, therefore, once we have differentiated between the mechanics of Tanai and the mechanics of toast, so we can understand very well that it is possible for the Kiddushin to unravel even after the time of the Nisuin. So, it follows according to the Beis Halevi, that if you have a toast, meaning that there was a mistake at the time of the inception of the marriage, in terms of a pre-existing condition, so that is not considered to be toast, that's considered to be a Tanai, and therefore, number one, I don't need an umdan of the muchok, I just need for the woman to say, had I known about this, I wouldn't have married him, and for her to be credible, and number two, as we say, toast, the olam kozer, that just like in a business transaction, we say if it turns out to be a toast, turns out that there was a mistake in the merchandise, that it's not really, you didn't get what you really thought you were getting, even as 5 years later, you're still able to revoke the transaction as long as after you discover the flaw, you're not going to continue to use the item. So too, if this woman doesn't continue to use the item after she discovers the flaw, she discovers that the husband's a mukashkin and she runs for her life, so then it should follow that she'd be able to revoke the whole thing. The only problem is, the Beis Halevi throws in one downer in this whole discussion if we want to use this as a solution for aguna problems. So Rabbi Kiva Eger, so the Beis Halevi would say, this is a great reason for the woman to show up at Beis Din and say, I demand a get, and for the Beis Din to insist that the husband gives a get. But to say that she can go scot-free without a get altogether, ooh, that's something else entirely. Go back to the second to last paragraph. In the boldface, you see, I was very, very considerate that I boldfaced a whole bunch of sections here. Amnam Lathotra, but he says that to release her, below get, ha'en shumakam le'omu klal. That's, hey, come on. You know, I have to preserve my reputation, he says. I'm not going to go that far. That lo adifam nimsamum b'isha, because let's say the husband finds a flaw in the wife. He didn't make a condition at the time that he entered into the marriage. He entered into the marriage, and then he discovers after he marries his wife that she has some terrible flaw. She has like some really awful blemish, and no husband would want to remain married to their wife after that blemish. Or she has nidorim that never got nullified, that she's not nullifying, and it's going to create a terrible strain on the marriage. So is he allowed to get rid of her without giving her a get? So the halacha is that we require, in these cases, we require a get. There's a machlokis in the Gemara between Rav and Rav Chista on the one hand and Rav on the other hand. Why do we require a get? Like, what's the, if the marriage really is premised upon a mekach tos, upon mistaken assumption, so why do we require a get altogether? So Rav and Rav Chista says, it's a dindur rabbanan. Don't bother me, it's a dindur rabbanan. Dindur rabbanan. Well, you can't argue with a dindur rabbanan. We're going to require a get. People shouldn't say that a woman goes free without a get. We're going to require a get.
But midoraisa, it would be no marriage.
Right.
Midoraisa, 100%.
We're requiring a get midoraisa. Comes along, Rav says, no, I require a get misafik. Misafik! If this would be a business transaction, it's money, I'm only dealing with money, so then we're going to say the whole transaction is null and void, and the money gets returned, and the object gets returned, and nothing else has to be done. But since we're dealing with Isura, which is Chamor, we're dealing with an Isra, Ishis Ish, and questions of a woman who would then remarry without a get, and maybe it will be considered adultery, so it's a suffix. So we're going to be worried that it's a suffix, that maybe, really, it's not such a big deal to the husband after all. After all, he didn't articulate that it was so important to him that the woman not have this blemish. He didn't articulate with his mouth to say, it's so important to me that the woman not have the darim. So the whole thing is a suffix, so we're going to require a get. So that's how we paskin. We'll take a look and say, Evan Ezra, Simon Lama Tessit Gimel, that's how we paskin. The guy Makidish Sam, Shmicha get me suffix. So who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like Rav and Rav Chista? That is a get that we require me Rabbanan? We require, we paskin like Rav, that it's me suffix. You look in the Rambam says, I require it me suffix. I require a get me suffix. So some say, so the Beis Halevi adopts that as well. That's what the Rambam says, what the Shulchan Aruch says, it's me suffix. If once I'm paskining like Rav, as opposed to Rav and Rav Chista, that the get is required, misafik. This machlokis, by the way, is in source ches. It's on Davkin Suvas Davkin. I am Gimel on the base. That's where I have the Mara Mokum for you about the machlokis between Rabin Rav Chista on the one hand and Rabba on the other hand. Whether the get is mean to a button, or whether the get is based on I have a suffik as to whether there really is a mekaptos over here. So if I'm really possible like Rabba, that it's based on suffik, and that's what the Beis Halevi says, oh, now I have an out as well. So another svar of Oculus, if I have a case where it's so clear cut that nobody in their right mind would enter into a marriage with such an awful and tremendous flaw that the husband might have in that particular case, or the wife as the case may be. So maybe then I'll say, that's not a suffix anymore. Well, it's not a suffix anymore, so then I don't have to be mockery like this line in the Beis Halevi to require a get. So that's another out over here. And in fact, who gives you that out? The Tosfos, if you take a look in source above on page 3, right? So the Mishnah there in Ksuba Stapayim Beisim of Ace talks about a man who marries a woman if he says, Amanas. I'm marrying you on condition that you don't have Nidarim, that there are no vows that are burning you, and it ends up that she has vows. So then for sure she's not Mekudeshes and you don't need to get her anything. But that's not the case we're dealing with, right? If that was the case we were dealing with, so then we wouldn't have problems. But the case we're dealing with is just a normal marriage, and nobody said anything. He just married her regularly, and then it turned out that she had Nidarim. Or it turned out that she had Mumin, right? That's the second clause of the Mishnah. It turned out that she had blemishes. So then we say she doesn't get a Ksuba. She doesn't get a Ksuba, but the Gemara says that that we do require a get, right? So Tosos asked the question. Tosos says, why is it that the only time that we say for sure in a Mekudeshes that the marriage doesn't take place altogether, let's say in the case of the blemishes, is in the case where he says amanas on condition. But we find elsewhere in the Gemara where if a Kohen marries, betroths a woman, she's not allowed to eat truma because maybe he'll discover some major flaw later on and it'll turn out that the betrothal wasn't really a good betrothal. So we see even though he didn't stipulate anything, we're going to just abrogate the marriage, you know, retroactively. And furthermore, we have the case that of the islandess, where the Mishnah says that, you know, if a man dies without any children, so then the wife is supposed to, let's say the man dies without any children, so then they're supposed to be yumum, right? Okay, but let's say that the wife ends up being an islandess. Let's say that he's married to multiple women. He's married to multiple women, and one of the women ends up being an islandess. What does an islandess mean? An islandess means a woman who does not have like the normal signs of the normal physical anatomical signs of femininity. She's not going to be able to have any children, and she doesn't really have the anatomical design of a woman. She has more the anatomical design of a man. She's like a zacha. She's like an ayol. She's like a ram. She's not, you know, really like a woman. She's more like a man. So therefore, we say that even though marriage was contracted, the marriage is considered to be null and void. So even if she would be, say, an erva to the brother-in-law, see, she was a niece of the brother-in-law, normally she would be the daughter of the brother-in-law, she was the niece of the fellow who died, and normally she would be an erva, in which case he wouldn't be allowed to marry the co-wife either. In this case, we say the marriage clearly was null and void, because a marriage with an islandess is null and void, and therefore the brother-in-law is allowed to marry the co-wife, even though the co-wife was also presumably a co-wife together with his own daughter, because the marriage with his own daughter was completely null and void. Okay? So he says, there we say that the marriage is completely null and void. So how come? So he says, you know what? We can draw a distinction between ironies and other blemishes. That maybe there are blemishes, and then there are blemishes. That some blemishes may be so great that we wouldn't say that it would be necessary in a case of tos to require a get, even the chumrah. And the and if you take a look in the Shita Mikubetzis, here on page 4, top of page 4, the Shita Mikubetzis quotes the Rimi Matarani. The Rimi Matarani says, not only in case of idleness, but he says that if I have the mumim hamechuarin, if I have certain blemishes that are like the most detestable blemishes, like the Mishnah gives like the most detestable cases where we absolutely require the husband under all circumstances, we would coerce him into giving his wife a get, like he has bad breath. That's like the worst thing. He has bad breath. He has a hand that's, you know, cut off or a foot that's cut off. So we say, all right, then we're not going to coerce him. But if he has bad breath, when we say bad breath, like, you know, the most foul, like he has like dragon breath. He has like dragon breath. Or he has like, you know, this terrible odor that's somehow oozing out of his nose, what we call Reach HaChotem. Or he's somebody who's a tanner and he constantly smells awful because he's dealing with dog dung and things like that the entire day. So we're dealing with that, so we actually compel a get. So he says in those cases, like the most extreme cases of the flaws of the husband, and also Mukashkin would be in that category. So then he says we would be prepared to say that if a wife, here we're talking about a woman, if a woman possessed those claws, so that would be such a bad case of Mekotol, so that presumably not even a get would be required. So we have like this discussion about, are there any class of cases where we would say where a husband marries a woman that the flaw is so great, even if he didn't stipulate it as a condition, if she has this flaw, we're not going to even require a get to be given. And it seems that there is some basis to say that. There are two deos in the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Mem Daled. If it turns out a woman is an islandess, do you have to give a get or not? Two opinions. But the Shulchan Aruch later on in Siman Kuf Ayin Zayin says that in the case that we discussed of the Mishnah in the Bamos, if it turns out that a man dies and one of his wives was an islandess, even though she was an Eber, the brother-in-law can marry one of the other wives. So that really seems to indicate that we hold like that, fundamentally like that opinion, that there are certain cases like an islandess and maybe certain extreme cases where at least if it was the woman who had the floor, then the man wouldn't have to give a get. So once we say that in the case where the woman has the floor, can we then turn it around and apply it to the man? So if you take a look in Source Yud Beis, I'll just say this on the outside. So in Source Yud Beis, we have this ends up being a machlokis between the Beis Shmuel and the Bach. It ends up being a machlokis between the Beis Shmuel and the Bach. Believe it or not, the Beis Shmuel tells you it's a machlokis. He's intellectually honest. He's speaking for himself. And he says, oh, by the way, the Bach disagrees with me. This is in Siman Kuf Nun Daled Sifkat and Beis, where the Beis Shmuel says, if you take a look, I'll just read the last line. From Lo Yodas, he says, all these cases of the Mishnayos towards the end of the Perek HaMadir, Daf Ayin Zayin or so, speak about flaws that exist with respect to the husband and how he's obligated to give her a get. So he says that the mama points out over there, in Yadavim, but if the woman knew about a lot of the flaws and said that she's prepared to live with them, so then we're not going to require the husband to give her a get. Because the son of the Kibla, because she knew about the floor and she accepted it. She knew that the floor existed and she accepted it. So the Beis Shmuel goes further and he says, if I'm Lo Yodas, but if she didn't know, like I have a case where the flaw only arose after the marriage. That's Mildu. Where the flaw only arose after the marriage, that's what the Mishnayos seem to be talking about. Then I have the case that the Rama is, oh, but if it existed before the marriage and she knew about it, so then all bets are off, she has to live with it. But what if it existed at the time of marriage, case number 3? But she didn't know about it. Number 1, it existed at the time of marriage, and number 2, she didn't know about it in that case. So then says the Beis Shmuel, I'm Lo Yodas, have a Mekaktos, that's considered to be a Mekaktos. So we'll apply this idea of Mekaktos, not only in the case of a man who discovers a major flaw with his wife, but even a wife who discovers a major flaw with her husband. Now the Beis Shmuel doesn't say whether in the Mekaktos case, that's just another reason that we're going to compel a get, or whether that means that we're actually going to let the woman go free even without a get, because the words that he uses is Bekofin Lahotzia. Bekofin Lahotzia. So we don't know from the Beis Shmuel that he's not going to say like the Beis Halevi. Yes, Mekaktos, but we're still going to require a get me something, right? Maybe we'll still require a get me something. And in fact, that's what the Shvus Yaakov says. Look at Source Yud Gimel. Okay, Yaakov Eger, the Shvus Yaakov, Chelek Aleph, Siman Kuf Aleph, terrible case. A young man married a girl, and then they got into a terrible fight Why did they get into a terrible fight? Because she discovered that he was impotent. He was impotent. He didn't have ruas and nashim. And she said, I didn't get married for the purpose of having an impotent husband. I went out. And he was really, really embarrassed. And he said, no, no, please stay with me anyway. What's so bad that I'm impotent? And she said, no, it's really bad. So she wanted out. And he said, oh, I can't take this anymore. This is so embarrassing. And I am going to disappear. He said, I'm going to die. Come on, she told a bunch of people, she died to a hakad and don't. I'm running away. She bavayimotzi. And I'm going to be like, you know, chometz on Pesach. Nobody's going to be able to find me ever. And in fact, that's what happened. Nobody was ever able to find him. And now she's sitting all alone. She says, young woman, do we say that this is a case of kiddushei tos? So Shlush Yaakov quotes the various sources. And he says that if you take a look at in the Mordecai, he quotes from the Mordecai, and he says that even if you hold that you're going to force the husband to give her a get, but you have to actually give her a get. Even a mukashkin has to actually give her a get. So you'll say, but if you look in the Mishnah, the Mishnah doesn't say that the cases that we're compelling to get are cases where the condition existed at the time of marriage. It just says shinodu. It doesn't say shinimtsu. He says, nice try, but I'm not going to be so lenient based on this cute little diuk between shinodu or shinimtsu. But he recognizes that the nature of, this is an important acknowledgement on the part of the Shlush Yaakov, he recognizes that the nature of a mum, nature of a when we speak about a mekach tos, is a mum for purposes of mekach tos, is that it exists at the time of marriage. That's obviously a very important criterion. It has to exist at the time of marriage. So then he quotes the Tosos. And he says, but what about the Tosos that says in the case of the islandess, a man marries an islandess, and it turns out the marriage is so completely null and void that you don't even have to give a get. So he says, so take a look on page 5, three lines in and after the ellipsis. Imkain, Nema, do what din misaris lebay get. So if we're not going to require a get, like Tosos says, in the case, even though not everyone agrees with Tosos, but if you say like Tosos, that in the case of an islandess, it's not even a need to give a get. So in the case of the islandess, the woman who doesn't have any femininity, then we're not going to require a get. So in the case of a saris, a man who's sterile and impotent, who doesn't have any masculinity, so maybe we also should not require a get. So he says, no, imishim halo irya. Says no, because the case of a woman is different. Very interesting. Why? The dark of islandness only where the woman has the flesh, she's provided mockery because her husband really cares. Because he has to produce children, because he has to fulfill the mitzvah fu'avu. A woman doesn't have the mitzvah fu'avu. I can't have a mecha close. Masha ain ken, number one with an isha b'isha. Number one, she ain't a mitzvah fu'avu. Number one, she doesn't have the mitzvah fu'avu. Number two, hajin l'klal in this sub'chodu nichalav lo'ave mecha close. A woman is satisfied with very little. So we'll go back to that principle. A woman is satisfied with very little, and therefore there's no mekach tos. Comes along the Har Tzvi, Pesach Frank. Okay, Tshuva Yudal, very similar type of case. Woman gets married, and then after a couple of weeks, the husband disappears, and they discover, why did he disappear? Because he's a werewolf. Because he's a shote gomer. Because he is a complete imbecile. He's a nut job. He's a complete nut job, this guy. He has the machla known as, he is nuts. He's bonkers. He's crazy. Now we have fancy psychological terms for that, but basically he's just crazy. He's a nut job. So the question is, if he's still an Indian, and he knew that he was a nut job, but he managed to conceal from his future wife, as they were about to get married, that he was a nut job. And now the question is, she's sitting as an aguna 14 years. This is 14 years already. She's an aguna. He ran away. He's a nut job. He's cavorting with the werewolves out there, lying in the cemeteries, whatever he's doing. They want to figure out, is there an argument that maybe once we say, like the Beishmul, the Mekatos can be applicable even when the husband has the floor, is there a way of saying that just like we say that in extreme cases, when the wife has the floor, there's no need for a get, maybe in extreme cases, when the husband has the floor, there might also not be a need for a get. And he found a tshuva from a Rishon. You see, if I quote him, I'm just innovating this on their own. That's what the Beis Halevi was circumspect. He's not going to innovate on his own to say that in this case, no get is required when he can't find any Rishon who said this, right? Like, when it comes to a woman having a floor, so you have Tosos who says, you know, maybe you could do without a get. But here, when it comes to a man having a floor, you don't find any Rishon. He found the Rishon. This changes everything. You find the Rishon, it changes everything. Who is the Rishon who came along to save the day? The Or Zeruah, okay? The Or Zeruah quoting from Rabbeinu Simcha. What was the case? A woman got married. Now, she was only Kiddushin. Some make a big deal over the fact that the case was only Kiddushin, not necessarily Nisuin, but, you know, at least we have a case. And Isha Shiniskacha Yidishliyak, woman, she got married. We'll see why it's important. It was either Shliach, she wanted so badly to get married, she relied upon an agent marrying her to the husband, sight unseen. It turned out it really was sight unseen because the husband had no sight to see with. It turned out that the husband was blind in two eyes, okay? Now, a woman can decide to marry a woman, a man who's blind, it can be a perfectly happy marriage. But, generally speaking, unless the woman knows about it, that could be a mekel tzos. If she didn't know that the man was blind, she didn't want to marry a man who was blind. And then it turned out that he was a summa mishtei enough. So then the question was, would you compel him to give the get? And this is what he said. He said, yes, you should force him to give a get, but that's only as what we call frosting on the cake or window dressing. The Phineas diet, if you look get lois to tzricha, because according to my humble opinion, there really isn't a need, strictly speaking, even for a get. Because if she did not know that he had this blemish, then that is kiddushei talsin. Obviously, you are kiddushei mitznayin, despite the fact that there was no explicit condition that was articulated. So we see from here that you could have that we saw rishon that gives us a basis for saying that when a woman enters into marriage with a man and there's a flaw she didn't know about at the time of the marriage and she doesn't want to stay in the marriage as soon as she finds out about the flaw, that the marriage is null and void, even to the extent that we're not going to necessarily require a get. And therefore, the Har Tzvi, or Tzvi Beisach Frank said, therefore, if you have a big Makam Igon, you can rely upon this. And also gambling get. You can allow it to release her even without a get. The Igros Moshe finds is the one who made this famous, okay? This is a source, Tesbob, okay? He made this famous in a tshuva that really was written a long time ago. So it's a tshuva that was written Tafshin Yin Aleph. This is 67 years ago. This is, or 68 years ago. This is, you know, before, you know, even there was this movement, you know, nowadays to find more solutions, you know, for aguna problems along these lines. So Moshe said, he was also dealing with a man who was impotent. He didn't have gevuras anashim, and there was no takana for him, and he does not want to give her a, he does not want to give her get, and he ran away. It looks a little bit from the way I copied Uvach from Qatar, he ran away in Purim Qatar. I think he ran away, and the tshuva was being written in Purim Qatar. But he ran away, and now the question is, can we permit this woman without a get? So the Satosos of Moshe quotes the various sources regarding islandists and so forth, and Ramoshe, you know, brings obviously the argument from Rashi that I mentioned. That's a very, very important source. The Rashi indicates that even though we don't say Tav L'Meisav Tandu, that even though we would say Tav L'Meisav Tandu with a woman who is married to a perfectly healthy man, then he dies and his brother happens to be a Mukashkin, but we would say with respect to the woman who marries a man who turns out to be a Mukashkin himself, that would be Kiddushei Tos. But what about a get? Since after Ramoshe goes through all these sources, and then the question becomes, what about a get? Do we require a get or require a get or not? And it seems like the way we're learning Rashi, we're saying that the Kiddushin will be bottled altogether. So he says, wait a second, but now we've been quoting Tosfos who says that an islandist, the case of islandist, we don't require a get. But there was the other opinion quoted in Shulchan Aruch Simen Mem Daled says that there's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, others, that say, no, an islandist really does require a get. And so, even in the case of an islandist, where we say that for sure a man wouldn't enter into a marriage had he known that the woman was an islandist, he still has to give her a get, it's still considered to be a kiddushin. So he says, Moshe actually articulates an argument which is exactly the opposite, it's exactly the reverse of the argument that was articulated by the Shus Yaakov. Shus Yaakov said, maybe we'll allow a man to escape without giving a get when it turns out that the wife had a flaw because he really wants to fulfill Peruvu. But the woman who doesn't have to fulfill Peruvu and is happy with anything, maybe she's going to require a get. So Moshe says exactly the opposite. Take a look. On the fourth line of page 6, okay, fourth line, three words from the end of the line. He says that we can draw a distinction. Says only in the case of the islandess, which is a woman, the woman where the husband, again, before Chayim Rabbein of Gershom, for sure, he had the ability to divorce her against her will. And even if nowadays he has the ability to do Chayim, to do a Hetem Meir Rabbanim. So therefore, if we say that it's still considered Kiddushim, it's not going to be such a big loss. So Sobe Rashi and others, and we're going to say that maybe the marriage really was valid, and therefore he has to give a get. But if the mumen in the blemish was in the husband, where she does not have the ability to force a get because a woman can't force a get on her husband, so that's more of a reason to say that no get should be necessary. Lo aminish nisratze. See, if you have any suing case, then you have to worry about osei adam milas or bilas nus. Says no, no, you have to worry about it at all. And he says that if I'm dealing with this type of a case where the man does not have a gruas anashim, by the miyutah shlamatzah, for a woman to be interested in marrying such a man is by the miyutah shlamatzah klal. So Moshe says that whenever I have a type of condition where it would be only a miut shelo matzli klal. Not only there's miut, there's miut a matzli, there's miut sheinu matzli, and then there's miut sheinu matzli klal. It's a miut sheinu matzli klal. It's like, you know, how are they going to find anybody in the world who would be who would want to marry a man in those circumstances? So then he says you could say kedusha tos. So what do I need for kedusha tos? It has to be a condition that exists at the time of marriage. It has to be the sort of thing that the like 99.9% of women would not can be presumed to not want to marry such a man. Number three, we said that he has to function according to the other laws of Mekach Tos, namely that as soon as the wife, you know, finds out about it, she has to leave the marriage immediately, because otherwise it's going to be considered to be a mechila. So I need for it to exist at the time of the marriage, so to be actual tos, and not in the category of tonight. It has to be the sort of, you know, that the woman didn't know about it, because otherwise we have the sub of Akibla that the Rama spoke about. It has to be three, it has to be so bad that 99.9% of women wouldn't want to stay with such a man. And number four, she has to leave right away. And Rama Moshe re-articulates all of those conditions in the tshuva that he has in Chelek Dad Simin Kuf Yud Gimel, where a woman was married and she discovered that the husband was a homosexual and preferred men over women, where Rama Moshe says there as well, you know, we couldn't be presumed that 99.9% of women are not going to be married to, are not going to want to marry a man who would prefer to be men with men as opposed to women. But he emphasizes how important it is that she run away immediately. But he says it as well, this condition, that it could be presumed that no woman would have wanted to marry under these conditions. The last thing that I'll just throw in, and this is mentioned, there are other tshuvos. You know, the problem is that even though there is a place for Mekach Tos, for Kiddushi Tos, unfortunately, it's tremendously abused. And people will use this argument to say, oh, Kiddushi Tos, even when it's a condition that sprung up 10 years after the marriage, or the husband is being a jerk by not giving a gift. That's not the type of condition we're talking about. But Moshe speaks about four different types of cases. He speaks about a case of a man who doesn't have Gevuras in Hashem. He speaks about a man who becomes a mumar, who wasn't a mumar, he was an apostate already at the time of the marriage, but the woman didn't know about it. He speaks about a man who was a shota, like the case that we were just mentioning before in the Harzvi. I think the Harzvi case was the shota case, where, you know, the man was psychotic and was known before he got married. And the fourth case that he talks about is the man who turns out to be a homosexual. But just to apply this to every single Tom, Dick, and Harry, you know, that's out there, who's an imperfect individual, so all human beings are imperfect. You can't apply Kiddushi Tos across the board. It's something you have to be very circumspect about. We had a case here a couple of years ago where we wanted to perhaps bring that argument. I remember I wrote to Rav Shlomo Amar at the time just to get his Chavis Das on it, and Rav Shlomo Amar, you know, said, among the other things, you know, he wrote that he has to go through the sugya because he's not so convinced either that you can apply it to women, you know, to a woman finding a flaw in the husband as easily as the other way around. But then he threw in as well, he said he's going to do more research into this. But then he also said that given that there are many people, rabbin ba'America, ba'ol mekomos ba'olam, ma'at gam be'eretz Yisrael, holik mispashi, that shimush behetu zeh ne'mekach tos, v'yesh tikshash, she'esh k'sas kalus. Based on Mekomas Chas Hashem, the people are taking it too far. Now, it's true, you have to be very cautious if you're taking it too far. It's also important that if there is a basis to apply in a particular case, so it's not something that we should ignore either. Just the Meshuk Halacha of Avadya Yosef Toledano, in his Sefer Meshuk Halacha, talks about a case of a woman who had borderline personality disorder. In the end, he wasn't making in that case, the facts weren't 100% clear, but he brings the argument that it's even more of a compelling case when it was the type of flaw that the man knew about but withheld from the wife. Because you could say that even, you know, if you're going to bring the argument that we have by Mekach Tos, so it's something that the woman could have checked out, but, you know, she didn't check out. If the man's withholding it from her, a woman has the right to rely upon representations of her husband that he's normal, that he's not going to withhold something very dramatic from her. It turns out that he did withhold something dramatic, so then there's more of a chazaka that for sure a woman wouldn't want to be married to a man who deliberately withheld this type of information from her. Okay, we'll stop here.
Tavla Mesa Tandu, are they still applying that nowadays? That's really dependent
Rav Soloveitchik held that as a basic general principle, Tavla Mesa Tandu and the Mesa of Amalu is still applicable nowadays. Still. But as we saw from Rav Moshe, we saw from the Mesa Levi as well, the contours and the parameters of its applicability will vary from maybe generation to generation, maybe vary from woman to woman and situation to situation. But as a general proposition, it is true. I can tell you, you know, I deal with Shiduchim, my wife and I both deal with Shiduchim. There is a basic element of truth to it that women very, very much want to get married. I mean, the raya is that my wife married me, that they're willing to settle sometimes. They're willing to settle. You know, they just want to get married.
Also, the Beis HaLevi, is he explaining the Gra? Or the Beis HaLevi is separate completely from the Gra? I mean, the first explanation for Mekach Toz.
I take credit for discovering the Gra. Nobody quotes the Gra, but I, you know, yeah.
Okay. Back to the situation where the Rabbanim, the Bezin says she's not a.
Right, we're not meeting next week, by the way. So in 2 weeks.
She's not a psula because they've been married. You just assumed that.
We assume that if there was an Isun. If a woman had an Isun, then we assume that she's considered halakhically a Ba'ula, even if objectively speaking she's a psula.
Right, but that situation is different than all the others because the mistake is in the
Yeah, completely different
law.
Because we say the mistake was that the man made a mistake in the law.
Right.
He just didn't know the halakha. Right. That's what Rabbi Kiva Eger says. That, yeah. Right, yes. Okay, very good. So who else?